This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
How are you, Rick?
Good.
Have a good weekend?
Good weekend. Went to a couple Christmas parties on Saturday. Friday went to... Oh, I got to thank my good friend Team Seymour at the Palm. Treated me like a VIP on Friday over there.
Didn't JP also go? Did he have something, or did he go the week before?
I know that he had like a concert that he went to.
Well, he had something. Yeah.
Oh, he did? I thought that was like, his wife. I thought his wife was going to the Clint Black concert. I think JP was probably laid in bed all Friday night.
Well, he was here. After the show Friday, which, by the way, the last hour of the show I don't even have a recollection of. I honestly don't remember, and that never happens to me. I went to the bathroom, found the couch on the way out, fell asleep for 3 hours. It felt like 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. Literally, I thought, well, I'll just take a little nap here. And I woke up 3 hours later.
Now, was your Lyft waiting for you? Had you already?
No, because it's up to me to order it.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to have to chill before I could go.
Okay, I got you.
And then I woke up, I come in here, and I see Drabby and Valdez. Just and they have this kind of dumbfounded look. And I go, what's wrong? What's going on? And then I notice JP's like a piece of furniture sitting right there on all fours, just passed out.
Right.
On all fours. I've never seen a person sleeping that way.
Right.
And
just miserable.
Apparently he had been that way for like the whole time, throwing up and just whatever. And then, you know, eventually I left.
So this was after your nap?
Oh, yeah. After 3 hours later after my nap.
Okay. So this is at 1 o'clock.
Yes.
Right. And he's on his hands
and
knees.
Passed out. I literally walked by him like furniture. I didn't even see him.
He looked like an ottoman.
You look like, yeah, you could go sit on him. And then...
By the way, you're shortchanging your nap.
I think it was 3 hours.
No. Well, it was 3 hours. But Jason, Eric was taking a nap in the middle of a radio telethon.
Oh yeah, because Elzol had their
I had to find a couch. It was the couches in the hallway. So, I mean, if the telethon extended the hallway, sure. But they were right behind us in the glass.
Did anybody try and wake you up?
No. And I could. You know how when you're sleeping, you can hear people talking. So I could kind of hear people talking the whole time. But I honestly thought. I was there for 20 minutes.
They were working around them.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, people could have been nice and just moved the couch with me on it. Move me down the hallway. But,
all right, so you come back in here.
He's like on all fours. I'm like, oh, man, he is banged up.
Okay.
And then eventually I go home. And then a couple hours later, I think he did venture out. And then I heard him on the radio yesterday, so I'm sure he was fine. But I told you we wouldn't be able to beat him. And I tried to beat him in the last hour.
You did.
Last 2 hours.
But you gave it a strong finish. But he was literally taking any cup on the table and drinking it.
And my understanding is...
All of the shots that the guys from Bonefish, Dave and Paul, were giving us, I wasn't doing them.
Yeah, you and Cakes both weren't.
Right. Well, he was doing all of them.
Yeah.
He was just taking cups, just downing them left and right. He really wanted to win the 5-unch.
I
grabbed out of my crack.
And then the other thing that kind of jumped out at me, though, is... So I did everything they gave me. You know, I was having fun. Cakes, I guess, wasn't. JP was going during the breaks and getting extras. So he was getting extras, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was sneaking off, and then the guys from Bonefish were feeding him shots.
Oh, really?
He was just downing them.
Yeah.
He must have done 12 shots.
I don't know what he did, but he did.
He said 12 shots.
I think he had 4 right before the final breathalyzer.
That's
like in a span of like 30 minutes,
well,
he had like 4.
So that's why he blew a .19, which is just hammered.
Oh.
And I was drunk as I can remember.
I don't remember the numbers. Maybe you do.
You had like a .10 or something.
Okay.
I remember the numbers.
You were in last, Jason.
You were in last. You were nursing it because you knew you were going
out
to dinner.
And it was weird because you started so quickly, too. Like, you were just...
I don't think he had a drink the last 2 hours.
He was like a tenth of a...
I was sipping it, but I wasn't doing the shots.
You were like a tenth of a point behind JP at like 8 o'clock or like the second round of them. And then all of a sudden, you just... shut it down.
But who knows? This could be skewed because you take a drink right before you blow in and it gets on the little...
That could be skewed too, but you're right. But JP was the most hammered by far and he blew the biggest number. But what shocked me though is, and I blew a .13 something and I was drunk and I'm telling you, I don't remember the last hour of the show at all. Mm-hmm. Now, people show me video highlights and stuff, and you know, on my Twitter, all these quotes, and sure, but I don't remember any of it. Cakes, meanwhile, wasn't drinking any of the shots. He was just drinking that Aslan beer.
Mm-hmm.
He blew a .16. He blew past me, significantly past me.
Yeah.
And everyone else here said he was acting normal.
You know,
you couldn't even tell he was drunk.
Compared to you guys.
Cakes might be a closet alcoholic. Cake,
that's the
point. He drinks the beers every night.
He drinks three beers every night.
Yeah,
his tolerance or whatever is crazy because he blew a .16, significantly more banged up than me. And I could barely walk. I had to nap for 3 hours. Cakes went downstairs, forgot something, came back up, gave it a drive. He went back downstairs like it was nothing.
And then he was out of here. Yeah.
Like it was nothing.
Now, did you go home and sleep as well?
I just kind of laid out. I didn't do much. I went to a friend's house, but I don't think it was that day. I ran some errands later in the afternoon. But right. I mean, it was just like
but
mellow.
You just chilled Friday night.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't have to throw up or anything, but I didn't feel, I didn't feel great. I just felt tired and, yeah. Then one thing I did do is I took a hot bath. That was a bad idea. That set me back about an hour because I think it dehydrated me.
Yeah. So don't we have to go even further on JP because he was on his hands and knees, but...
But I left.
But
so
other
I don't know
stuff
what,
happened.
I don't know what happened after that. I think he was just here another couple hours.
Well,
he was throwing up.
At one point...
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, he was throwing up from what I understand. I never saw it.
That was the biggest part of the story.
At one point, it was 2:30 on Friday, and me and Drab were still here kind of watching over him, and we're looking at each other going, how long do we have to stay? Then we ended up just throwing him in CK's office, and he was just laying face down. And he ended up taking a shower at 4 o'clock and then leaving by 4.
Oh, he took a shower downstairs?
Yeah, downstairs. And CK gave him all the free radio station shirts and everything.
Because
so he could change out of his
puke
shirt.
Was there vomit all over his shirt and jeans?
All over. Because what he was doing is he was laying face down in the studio on the floor. He was puking and then rolling around in his puke like a pig.
Oh,
we
my
had
God.
We had to get the janitors up here to steam clean the entire
great.
Studio.
So great they did that, though.
So that was
Chad did his show from in here because you couldn't take the smell.
I'm sure he was happy.
he understood.
Oh my
and
God.
And then Drab and I were holding him when he had to go to the bathroom. Like we literally had to carry him.
Were you worried that you might have to call an ambulance?
Yes, there was discussion whether or not we should take him to the hospital. And
what
get,
did the cops
his,
say?
His stomach
what did the
pumped.
Cops say? Like, did they care or they just left?
They were out of here by 10 o'clock.
Yeah, they didn't want to stay.
They had no idea what happened.
Right.
There was a point where JP, Drab and I took JP to the bathrooms. He said he had to use the bathroom. So he goes in and he does number two in the bathroom.
Where are you guys, right outside?
And so we're right outside. and JP can't even stand. Like we literally had to carry him to the bathroom.
How'd he clean himself?
Well, Drab and I looked at each other and we said,
we're not doing
that. I said, dude, one of us is going to might have to clean because I don't think he can do it.
There's just no way I would do that.
Now, luckily, JP was able to hook it
right.
himself.
Yeah.
I don't think he did a very good
job.
Can
you imagine how miserable he was on Friday when he got home?
I can't imagine. But here's the bottom line.
I would have been so embarrassed.
Here's the bottom line. It was
because all the other employees saw it. They had to have.
Saw
everything that was going on.
Yeah, but he does. He's oblivious. He had no idea.
No, I know, but I would.
But here's the thing. The bottom line is when I got home, the response I got from Buddy is the best drinking show we've ever done, right? Because everyone got so hammered and had so much fun.
Right.
But we can't ever do that again where we have that. What put it over the top was the incentive for the money. That's what put it over the top because even for shots or whatever, we wanted a couple extra $100.
All right, so we got to back off the monetary.
If we want to do the holiday drinking show, it has to be sort of at our own pace.
Yeah.
He'll blow a
because
nice
every
point
single Christmas show, he'll do that exact same thing.
He won't be able to contain himself. Maybe next year he'll slut, but it's just you can't put the money incentive in front of us.
Well, he was telling us how he's never going to do that again. But
right.
But who knows if he'll
who knows
stick
a year
to
from
it.
Now?
Yeah.
But you can't put the money incentive in front because it's just someone's going to die.
Right. Probably him.
And we've done 15 years of holiday shows or more, and never really had a big problem. But as soon as we put the money incentive, which made it more fun, it also made it incredibly crazy.
Well, that's only happened twice, right? Because Cakes threw up
one
once.
But that wasn't for money,
that
was it?
That wasn't for money, no. Yeah. This was the first year that
money
was
involved.
That was
just youthful indiscretion.
And then, of course, on Friday, JP does it.
Right.
Nuts.
But again, so JP clearly obliterated, hating it, going to pay for it. I don't remember ever not remembering something. And it's not like I passed out. And I don't remember. I participated in the last hour of the show, and I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember Bruce coming in. D texted me, and he said, the guy that sings always slays me. Yeah. And I go, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I have no recollection of it.
He was good. He did a couple songs.
Yeah. He actually texted me yesterday, too. What charities does he owe? Because he was throwing out some stuff, so we'll have to talk about it.
Yeah, that's right. He owes a couple thousand.
I know he is donating to Nick Sundberg's charity and Alex Smith's charity.
Right.
All right, so I'll text him that.
And there's one more. I don't know. I can't remember.
And then, just Cakes just being a quiet drunk. Just out drinking two of us. Quietly, just drinking beer. Mm-hmm. Blowing up.
The Aslan beer isn't like your regular Miller Lite.
It's very strong.
I mean,
beer.
Like some of the stuff he was having is like 8%, and then I know they have like a 15% beer that they dropped off. So,
well, I can tell you this: I blew 0.13, and I.
But if Cakes was walking around after the show and said, "All right, I'm going to drive home," and I didn't see him drink all those beers, I'd probably say you're probably fine
because you didn't even. Because
I was oblivious to it since he hides
that's
it so
my
well.
Point. When I. Yeah.
Functioning.
When I left here to go to the bathroom, as I was walking, I was going, oh, man, I am banged up.
Right.
That's why immediately after I went to the bathroom, I said, I got to find a couch to sleep on.
Yeah.
Cakes blew a 0.16. Right? I don't even know what percentage that is higher, 1.6 to 1.3. Right. And he's walking around like nothing happened.
And probably could have passed a field test.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Well, I went home.
Crazy.
I went home, took a nice 2.5 hour power nap, and then, I was a little groggy the rest of the day, but I was good. Went out to dinner on Friday night. Was home relatively early. But
Timmy took care of you?
Timmy
felt
Seymour.
Felt like a rock star when
Timmy
you were there?
Timmy Seymour. God, I love that guy. Had the best sea bass I've ever had. But, I was fine. And then, Saturday I had a couple Christmas parties. Mm-hmm. My wife was just Dunsky.
Oh, she was JP'd?
Oh, my gosh. We had to leave the party early.
Was she drinking wine? Champagne
yeah,
and all that.
She was getting into all of it. Yeah. Yeah. No, mostly wine.
Right.
I mean, she was having a good time, but luckily the second party was our next door neighbor's house.
So that was the easy.
And she did the old Irish goodbye. She just rolled out.
Right.
And
you stayed?
No, I stayed for like another 20 minutes. Then I was home.
Right.
But then she had another happy hour last night, a white elephant party with her girlfriends.
Right.
The same cast of characters that just go out and get house all the time.
Right.
And I said, look, I know how you feel because she slept all day Saturday.
Right.
And all day Sunday. I said, know how you feel. Just keep it easy. Have a couple beers if you drink. She goes, I'm going to be home by 8 o'clock.
Right.
Because she's got to get up early today with the kids and everything. So I'll be home by 8 o'clock. 11:30.
Oh, no. Are you texting her going, is it all right?
No, because I'd fallen asleep. I just knew whenever she goes out with those girls, she's not getting home when she says she's going to get home.
Right.
Might have been after that, actually. It was definitely at least 11 o'clock.
Right.
And she was banging into things.
Well, I wish I was as banged up on Sunday as I was on Friday, so I didn't have to remember that Redskins
right
game.
Oh,
yeah.
Jesus.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
800-636-1067. But as we do every Monday, he covers the Redskins for ESPN.com. We talked to John Keim. John? How are you, buddy?
John, good morning.
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
I mean, what can you say about what happened yesterday?
I think you guys need to do a repeat of your Friday show to take the heat off this franchise.
Yeah, that's what everyone's saying. That's what everyone is saying.
I mean, it's just, every few years you kind of think, like, boy, look how far they've fallen. Yeah. And yesterday was another marking line in that, and it's just... talking after the game with other writers, like, a month ago, this team is 6-3.
Yeah.
And you're a questionable or bad call from being in position to kick a better field goal to beat Houston. I mean, it's remarkable, but I think when you look at the history of this franchise, I think a lot of fans are probably saying it really isn't.
Yeah, we've all been here before. You asked the critical question in the presser, one of the first ones. Jay didn't have an answer for it. offensively, we understand the injuries have taken their toll. You're bringing in guys off the street. Your backups are getting hurt and that sort of thing. Kind of understand their struggles. Defensively, that's kind of inexplicable. And I don't think Jay had an answer. I'm not sure that you have an answer yet for yesterday. But what have you seen? This has been a slow burn now. We've been seeing this the last 4 or 5 weeks, giving up 400-plus yards every week, down 40 zip. We sort of bottomed out, I hope, yesterday. How did we get to this point? You know, where do we point our fingers?
Yeah, and I think anytime there's a drop-off like this, it's never a single reason. And it's true of anything, because there's not a magic wand. You say, well, you change this, then everything's great. And that's whether we're talking coaches, players, whatever. I kind of look at it as a mix. It's all in there. And, you know, you can look at some players and say, boy, this guy keeps making the same mistakes over and over again. Okay, well, if that's the case, well, then what's your answer as a coach? Because that's your job, is to find the answers. Putting certain guys in the same position over and over is not an answer, you know, because it's not working.
So who's repeatedly making mistakes, John? Who's repeatedly?
Well, I think you can look at, and I'm kind of speaking generally, but I think, you know, if they feel like, I mean, Zach Brown didn't play a lot yesterday, and they said it was because of illness. Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's probably some frustration over the inconsistencies there, you know, with his play. So, you know, now whether I'm not singling him out, because it's not like they played well when he was on the sidelines, but if there are issues where you, like, for example, like in the run defense, there are a lot of times where you see the same mistakes, and they're not necessarily the same player, but the same mistakes. So if the same mistakes are happening, what do you do to change that? And so, like, you can look, and there's the player's aspect, which is, you know, guy missing a tackle, guy getting out of his gap all the time. This is happening all the time. It's a very undisciplined defense as far as executing their assignments. You know, secondary run support has not been good during this stretch. You know, there are linemen that you wonder, are they just gassed? You know, Jonathan Allen, Deron Payne played a lot of snaps early in this year, and this is the most they've ever played in their careers, the longest stretch. So you wonder about what the impact is of that. Then you can look at, I think the edge play has to be better against the run in overall. You know, I think the inside linebackers, you can point to a number of things. And, you know, so there's a lot of things, and that's why I say it's a mixed bag. And then, you know, then I think, like, when you hear DJ Swearinger talk, I mean, there's clearly, and I'm not, he's not the one revealing. I just think through him, you're seeing just, this is not a defense that I would say has great chemistry. And I think, you know, he even brought up yesterday, he said, you know, I've been on talented teams that were 2-14 and teams that weren't as talented that made the playoffs. I said, what's the difference? He said, chemistry. And I always go back to a line when in that 2000 season, when Larry Setters was here, you know, that team was 6-2 and they finished 8-8. And I remember talking to him at the end of the year. I said, you know, he said something about chemistry. I said, yeah, but you guys look like you guys got along. He said, it's easy to get along when you're winning. When you get punched in the mouth is when you find out what your chemistry is like. And I think we're seeing that.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point, and I think we talked about it last week. But when Alex was healthy, you know, their time of possession was up near the top of the league, right? And in the last 4 weeks, you know, I think you're making a good point about the defense just getting grinded down, especially the defensive line. Not that that's an excuse. Shouldn't be an excuse.
No, it's not an excuse.
But it's happening. It is happening.
It's happening. It's definitely happening. And I think, you know, like I said, there's not a single answer here to the defense. I think there will be. I think there needs to be multiple changes there. But I do think that's one of the keys to their success early in the year was ball control. You know, the lack of turnovers and just solid defense overall. And I think I'll go back even with, you know, Alex Smith, it's Brandon Sheriff. Losing him at right guard, I think, was a major blow because of what it allowed them to do in the run game. And it started to put, when he was gone, the run game starts to suffer. When the run game suffers, there's more emphasis on what they don't have in the pass game. And they weren't equipped to win just as a pass team. So, you know, I think it's those injuries, yeah, it definitely hurt. And, you know, you look at, with Alex Smith, was not, I wouldn't say he was playing great, but he was playing, like Alex Smith and early in his Kansas City days, where you do control it and you do stay out of mistakes most of the time, and you do work the clock. But it's also managing the game, and people hate that phrase, game manager, but that's all quarterback is. Now, mm-hmm. there's different levels that you get to with it, but that's a lot. That's what we saw, you know, with Mark Sanchez yesterday. There's not an ability to do that here at this point, and so you see the impact. But yeah, I'll go back to – I'll use the Alex Smith thing, but it's as much Brandon Scherff too, because that impacted the run game severely.
And Dix really has been a disappointment. You may disagree,
yeah.
but he's taking bad angles all
disagree.
The time. Yeah, I mean, the long pass to Coleman, he's late on that down the left sideline. I mean, it just seems like he's always out of position. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't worked out. You know, I don't think there's – you know, I think whenever there's a trade like that, and especially in the season, when you have a team like Green Bay where he was at and they're giving him up, you can say, like, now I will say at the time I thought, okay, he can at least help this team and at least provide depth behind, you know, give them in case something happens to Monte Nicholson and you can have DJ stay in the box where he's a lot better. So at least there's that, but it hasn't worked out that way. And so, you know, but you always have to wonder, why is a team giving up a guy in the middle of the season when they don't have a lot of answers themselves at that spot? That's where you have to, you know, you always have to keep that in mind. And, you know, now they gave up a fourth round pick for him. And, you know, part of the thinking at the time was, well, if he doesn't resign here, he'll go out and get a good deal and you get a comp pick, or at least a potential for a comp pick. And I'm not so sure that that's going to, I don't know that that will be the case, because his play hasn't warranted any sort of a big deal somewhere else. But yeah, no, I mean, he hasn't been, I mean, he hasn't been that last line of defense that they need to prevent some of these big games. Yeah.
All absolutely. Right, John, is there any chance that there can be any stability over the last three games with a guy who has started five games in his entire career? And that's Josh Johnson. He played a little better. They had a little spark. I assume he'll start the last three if he could stay healthy. Is there any chance he can keep them competitive at least?
I don't know. I'm not that smart.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, and I think what you saw yesterday was, if nothing else, his ability, because he understands the system, there was less hesitation when he dropped back in the pocket than there was with Sanchez. I mean, definitely. And I think his ability also to move. And the one thing, you know, with Sanchez, one thing in talking to people, like, last week, the lines were, it was always, well, if a guy's, you know, in his situation, the guy comes in and he only knows a little bit of the offense, if he's not comfortable, his eyes go to the first read and then to the pass rush. And I think that's what was happening yesterday, because there were times where he's leaving the pocket before he needed to, because he, you know, as far as where are my second options, where are my check downs, you have to know all that. And a lot of times a check down is right in the middle, so they're right in his line of vision, so he knows where the guy is. Josh Johnson was a lot better with that and a lot more comfortable in the pocket. And I think his ability to run was a major plus. And we saw that. And I think a lot of people were probably surprised at how athletic he is. Mm-hmm. So now, whether he can provide the stability, I don't know. They're playing a bad team this weekend in Jacksonville, and they're facing Cody Kessler. So, you know, the ratings should be through the roof on this one. But the other thing is, like, I wonder the same thing, like, God, he looked good, but it's like, but the guy hasn't started for a reason.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, and it's like, and now he's on film, and so now Jacksonville can, okay, this is all we got to do here. You know, and so we'll see how that goes, but I think that, you know, clearly I think he gives them a better chance right now than Sanchez, just because he has more ability to get out of the pocket and hurt a team with his legs. And I think that's a major plus that they need right now. And, you know, even before, like, I talked to Jay Gruden last week, and he even said that they had some packages ready for him. I think they wanted to use him in that game yesterday, even if it had been close. I think especially if it had been close, just as a change of pace for a defense to face.
Right.
So this is certainly rock bottom for this year, we would think. But I don't think they're going to win another game.
There's 3 weeks left.
That's true.
That's
true. I don't think they're going to win another game. Eric's still holding out on some hope there.
Well, I'm just a fan. I'm hoping they can.
I just don't think it's going to happen. So they're going to lose, what, 7 in a row in my book. And the question is, you know, what are the decisions that really need to be made in the offseason?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think we all know the decisions that have to be made. And you cannot there are definite reasons the last 2 years why they've had certain records, and the injuries are a major factor. I mean, they are a factor. And it's hard to deny that, but you also can't ignore. You can't just go by that alone, because I think if you go by that alone, are you really improving as an organization? I think they have to obviously take a hard, hard look at every aspect of this organization, and why are people staying away in droves? And, you know, I think that has to be you have to look at everything, and you can't just write it off because of the injuries. I think that would be a mistake. Now, what changes will be made, I don't know. I think, like I said, there's, you know, whether it's Bruce Allen, Jay Gruden, Greg Minuski, all of them, one of them, you know, I think you can't come back with the same group and expect fans to buy into that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, again, whatever that means, we'll see. That's not my call, but I know, you know, you hear from the fan base, you hear the frustration, you see it in the stadium. It's remarkable where this franchise has gone, because, you know, when I started covering this team years ago, and even for a long time, it was, you know, you would not have foreseen this.
No.
But, you know, and so I think the owner has to be well aware of that. And I think, where do you have to sell hope, and where's the hope for this fan base? And, you know, the draft pick won't be, it'll be higher, but not as high as it, you know, where you need to get guys who can sell that hope, meaning another right. quarterback, which they have to now draft. So it's just, there's a lot of hard decisions that, and I think fans would say easy decisions, but for them, they will be hard decisions that they have to make.
I don't think this is your bag, John, because I know you're more of an X's and O's guy. You're, you know, football guy. But do we, you know, no, Dan doesn't let anybody in, right? So we have no idea. I have no idea how this guy's mind works, other than
right.
just sort of reading his track record and his history. I know Bruce. He's a loser. I know how his mind works. So I get him. Let's say they move on from him. Who are the inner circle guys, though? Do you have any idea that influence Dan? Maybe we can get insight into what might happen if we know who his inner circle guys are.
Well, you have to look at some of the people, you know, obviously some of the other investors with him.
Right.
You know, because, and I think that's where you'd have to go. And, you know, I think you can, I think there's a way to get around that for some people who can kind of, you know, through a, you know, quote unquote, like, I don't know, word of mouth, get things back to him, who know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm not one of them. But, you know, inside the organization, it'd be hard to say, because it's Bruce, and it's Bruce and Jay. And, you know, I don't know that there's anybody else there.
Investors, though. There's got to be investors in
Dan's
ear.
There's definitely the investors. Yeah, absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And those guys, those are the ones who would have some of the. Because listen, you go way back to Marty Schottenheimer, and mm-hmm. you know, which is, to me, remains the biggest mistake they've made here is that not just fire getting rid of him, but you had John Schneider in the building. You know, I mean, this guy could have built something here just like he did in Seattle, but part of the reason why Marty went, and there were a couple of reasons. One, Marty, I don't think, knew how to play the game with Dan, and it's Dan's
right.
team, and you have to play a game because it is Dan's team, and like it or not, that's the game you play.
Right.
Because just like anybody who has a boss, you have to know what the boss is like, and you work around those rules. Marty did not, and you know, you need to keep him informed, but you also have to kind of, you know, get along with those around Dan. And Marty did not do that either. He rubbed them the wrong way. And so after 1 year, it led to an ouster. So but the point is that group, you know, does have an influence over
right.
what's going on.
Right.
At least can get to, can say some stuff to him.
Well, unless they know nothing, you know, less than what Dan knows, or they don't have the balls to tell Dan, hey, we need to make
right.
a change.
But if they hear it from certain people, maybe they go to him and just say, you know, man, I keep hearing this, or, you know, this is, but yeah, I don't, you know, and I don't know the answers to that, like what they think, you know, about anybody here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I do think that, you know, he does have that group, and that's a group that has been, you know, influential and heard in the past.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, John. Appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right. John Keim, everybody, from ESPN.
D'Angelo Hall, he's driven by your D.C. area Acura dealers and the 2019 Acura MDX. Test drive the best-selling third-row luxury SUV of all time at your local D.C. area Acura dealer. Find the closest one to you at dcacuradealers.com. D-Hall, what's up, bro?
What's going on?
D, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing better than the Redskins right now. So
that's for sure.
Yeah, that was ugly.
Let me ask you this.
Ugly.
Before we get into the game, right? Because I mean, it's almost silly to talk about the game, but we can do that. I wanted to ask you about Dan because, you know, obviously, you know, we take calls, and first thing is everybody wants to get rid of Bruce. There's not a single guy in town that wants to keep Bruce. But, you know, that's been that way for a while. Dan's the one that makes this call. You've played. You've been sort of a legendary Redskin. I know you've had one-on-one time with Dan. He's an enigma to the rest of us, right? He doesn't make himself available to the media. You really only see him sort of out on the field talking to guys before a game, and you see him in his luxury box, and that's about it. What is Dan like when you have one-on-one conversations with him? I mean, is he a complete social moron? Is he normal? Is he a weirdo? No. I envision this guy just played like Dungeons and Dragons as a kid or something. Like, give us some insight into Dan Snyder and what he's like.
I mean, just in my interactions with Dan, man, he's been just a great person, a very loyal person.
Is he normal? You know,
always, yeah, super normal. Super normal. I mean, it's intimidating to run up on any billionaire and to even think that you know that Dan's a billionaire and you know that I've had a conversation with him, because I feel like I would be nervous if I was meeting a random billionaire who was a real estate mogul or a random
like a
billionaire
Warren Buffett
who
or something.
Yeah. I think I would be a little, you know, not shy, but, you know,
a little intimidated, maybe.
A little intimidated, without a doubt. Yeah, but like when I met Dan, like I never had that feeling. And the same thing with like a guy like Arthur Blank. For some reason, I feel like sports owners tend to be a little more relatable and down to earth than your just average Joe billionaire guy. But I mean, my relationship with Dan has been great. You know, he's been a guy who I've been able to talk to when I've had problems or things come up.
Right.
You know, he's a guy who's always kind of asked my opinion on certain things, whether it's the feel of the building or the feel of the locker room or the team or what we need to do to kind of get better. I mean, he's a guy who grew up a Redskins fan. You know, he grew up not far from RFK Stadium, and you know, to have an owner, that's really, really rare to have an owner who grew up in the community of the team that he was able to purchase. And so for Dan, like, it's so personal trying to get this thing turned around. And you know, I remember Dan kind of being a little hands on when I first got here.
Right.
And when I say hands on, it was just he was always around. He was, you know, he was very accessible. I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard stories kind of before I got there that, you know, if a guy like CP, who was obviously very close with Dan, would get a fine from, you know, one of the coaches. Obviously, it was before kind of Shanahan and even, I guess, Zorn, because like I said, it was before I got there. But kind of heard stories that, you know, if a guy got a fine, they would take it in to Dan. CP's name was always the one thrown up. Like I said, I've never seen it happen, but I've heard stories that, you know, CP would kind of go to Dan, like Dan would be the guy who would, you know, kind of bridge the gap between the coach and the player. Kind of the same way Al Davis worked when I was in Oakland. If you had a problem with anybody in the front office or anybody on that coaching staff, all you had to do was go talk to Al Davis and he'd get it fixed out, you know, where he'd get it figured out. And so Dan's kind of gotten a bad rap. You know, I always tell people, man, Dan's one of the coolest down-to-earth people I know. But for the average person, you really don't get to see it. You know, you kind of hear the stories of,
no, nothing,
you know, trying to buy championships and things like that. And I'm like, you know, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't have tried to throw money at the problem and, you know, and try to fix it? I know if I was in that situation as an owner, that damn show would be my approach initially. And you know, over the years, Dan has kind of figured it out. You know, he's kind of, you know, step back and giving control to other people and kind of, you know, let the process play out. And you know, I think that's kind of what you have to do. Is just kind of let the process work itself out.
I agree with that.
You know, I had fans. I don't mean to cut you off, JT.
Yeah, yeah.
Or is that Bish?
No,
that's
Eric.
That's Eric.
It's TB, but that's fine.
My bad, EB. No, but I was going to say, you know, a lot of people always want to. I'm not going to say single Dan out, but it's almost like you can't be damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Here's the thing with Dan. I actually agree with you. From afar, it certainly appears like he's pulled back and he's letting the other people that he's hired run the operation. At least that's what it seems like from afar. But those people haven't been successful. And specifically, let's point to Bruce. And I'm sure you have a good relationship with Bruce. I'm not going to ask you to denigrate him. But the guy's record speaks for itself. It's 9 years now, 58-82-1. Why the loyalty? Why is Bruce still here?
Because he's, at the end of the day, I think he's great at what he does. I mean, he's great at his job. I mean, his job isn't necessarily, to pick, you know, the talent. Like, I don't really know the structure of the front office per se. You know, we've hired a lot of new guys this past season that obviously I'm not in the building, so I don't really know what everyone's role is. But I mean, Bruce's role is the president over the whole thing. We have a guy who's in charge of college scouting. We have a guy who's in charge of pro personnel. And, you know, we have a lot of lieutenants who kind of fall underneath those guys, and they all kind of work in conjunction with Bruce and Dan. We don't have just one guy kind of pulling the strings, kind of like I don't even say pulling the strings, but one guy who's kind of making all the personnel decisions.
Right, but like, Bruce makes the final call.
I don't know if that's 100% true. I know he gets the title of saying he makes the final call, but, you know, I haven't sat in a meeting and saw Bruce have a guy picked out, Jay have a guy picked out, the head of pro scouting have a guy picked out, and ultimately they go with Bruce's guy. Like, I haven't been in a meeting and seen that happen. I've been in a meeting where I've seen everyone talking and voicing their opinions and, you know, coming to a consensus. I haven't seen just one guy kind of overruling everybody and saying, all right, I got final say. This is what we're going to do, guys. Mm-hmm. All right, next. So I can't really comment on what I haven't seen. I know the way the structure is laid in place, it seems that way because Bruce is the president.
Right.
And then you have, you know, you don't have a GM actually in place. And I don't even know exactly what Doug's title is, but he has some power to stay over there as well. So, you know, I joke with him all the time about I'm ready to be the GM. And so
and
I don't
ask
know
you
if
this.
I quite want that job yet. But.
Oh, I was going to ask you, if Bruce actually called you and said, hey, D'Angelo, we really want a former player to come in who was in the league just a couple of years ago. You know the league, especially defense. Can you help us kind of scout some of the possible free agents out there? Maybe not look at the college players. Let the college guys handle that. But in terms of pro personnel, and if they wanted you to come help, would you do it? Or is that too much of a commitment?
Nah, I would do it, but just some things have to change. Like for me to entertain something like that, like I need some assurances that my voice would actually carry some weight. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to just come in there and be a yes man.
Right.
I'm just not. You know, I have a very different viewpoint on a lot of things because some of these knuckleheads, some of these guys, you know, that you kind of don't know about. Like, I was one of those guys. You know what I mean? So, you know, who better to help guide young men or even figure out if a dude is selling you a crock of crap or if he's telling you the truth. You know what I mean? Like, I sat in those meetings as a 20-year-old rookie or potential draft pick, kind of telling coaches exactly what they wanted to hear. I knew how to play that game. And so, I can smell BS from a mile away, and, you know, just having the chance to, you know, when I was figuring out if I wanted to get in the front office or get in the TV, just having the chance to sit in on some of those combine meetings, like I could easily tell who was very, very genuine and who had been coached up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Who's his agent? Oh, yeah, his agent recruited me. I can remember. Boy, he had a whole team of guys who would walk you through the combine process and almost give you the perfect answer for every question. And you could feel that from some guys. Some people might not have been able to feel it as well as I could. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying I'm just the world's greatest or the smartest guy in the world, but, you know, I'm a pretty young guy. I just came out of that locker room. I know how to relate to players. I know ultimately who can play and who can't play, who really is about football and who's about all the shiny, you know, glamorous things that football gives you. Because that's ultimately what you want. You want a locker room full of guys who love football, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. who want to do what it takes to win each and every game. And, you know, watching what we saw on the field yesterday, I don't feel like we had a lot of those guys out there.
Well, it was an embarrassment. And you know, look, I don't know what you want to say about DJ, but, you know, the weekly tirade of criticizing the coaches from DJ Swearin is just tired. It's not.
See,
like,
I didn't even hear any post-game comments. I was so kind of just turned off by what I saw. Because, you know, like I told people, I've been on the other end of some butt whippings too. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like, when we threw a visual up of like the Redskins' biggest deficits at halftime. Hell, my teams were on there twice, and I was telling somebody like, man, I would love to see what those numbers look like at the end of the game, because I felt like at halftime, like we were going at each other to make sure we get this thing turned around and making sure guys didn't quit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not gonna say I felt like guys quit, but it just didn't feel like it was very important.
It looked like it. How about that? It looked like they quit.
Well, it looked like it wasn't important to them. It's hard to say a guy quits because, it's, you know, if you quit out there on that football field, you can seriously get hurt. But if things aren't important to you, if taking that extra step and diving as opposed to let me lay out right now just so I don't have to keep chasing this dude, you know what I mean? Like, to me, that can be corrected. And so you just got to get the right kind of guys in here and the guys that want to win. You know, like I said, I didn't hear DJ's comment, but just knowing what he said in weeks past, it's a cry for help. It's a cry for, hey, look, God, this is what we need to do. And for him to, I don't know what he said, but if he's saying the same thing that he's been saying previous weeks, at some point either the staff is going to take notice or the ownership and guys at the top down going to take notice and coaches are going to get asked these questions that, hey, why is DJ always coming out saying XYZ? And, you know, at the end of the day, those questions have to be answered by that staff and those people in that building, and they got to fix it. If a player feels like this is wrong, I mean, you see what happened with Aaron Rodgers. You know, he obviously had some, you know, didn't agree totally with what Coach McCarthy was doing, and that organization made a change. I don't know if it was the right change. I think Mike McCarthy was a hell of a coach. But they made a change. They felt like, hey, this is what needs to happen, and that's what they did.
Let me ask you quickly, if you were brought on as a consultant, all right, to help with the defense over the last 3 weeks, this defense was performing in the first 6 or 7 weeks. Now, they haven't had injuries. They've completely fallen off a cliff. If they brought you in for the last 3 weeks to plug some holes and to simplify things or whatever, what would you do? What would you suggest?
I mean, without having watched every piece of film, you know what I mean? I've really just watched football games. I know talking to B. Mitch, he had kind of a philosophy where he thought the problem was up front, and he thought it was technique. Trevor thought it was just guys not really playing as well as they did, and just kind of slowing down. And so, you know, I don't have a take on it. I kind of feel like, at the end of the day, like, you're going to play some teams that's going to get a lot of yards. You're going to play some teams. Like, every game I played, I tried to shut the guy down. It doesn't mean it happened every time I played a guy. You know what I mean? You ask fans, some fans say, oh, D-Hall was one of the best corners we've ever had. You ask some other fan, oh, D-Hall was one of the worst corners we've ever had. And so, it's, you know, the numbers are the numbers. Obviously, they haven't done great, but I can't point out one particular problem and say, hey, you know, we aren't doing this. We aren't doing this right. It's a group thing, man. Like, they got to tackle better. They got to get off of blocks. They got to play with that attitude that I felt like we saw early in the season. I almost feel like, you know, when you know your chances to win aren't great, you tend to not be as focused and as locked in. And when I say that, I mean knowing Mark Sanchez is your quarterback. You know how many guys in that locker room all week had to answer questions about the butt fumble? Mm-hmm. And then that's brought back into their, you know, their memory bank, and they're like, oh, man, like, do we really have a chance with this dude at quarterback?
But they were game out going in. They had a chance to win 10 games.
When you got everything to play for, and that's what I wanted to see how this team responded, because you have everything to play for, and let's see what happens. Like, I don't like those people at the end of the day, they get mad or cry after losses, after they lose a championship game, they cry. And, you know, my son, yeah. Example, crying after loss. Right. I was so mad and ticked off. And I asked him, well, you know, don't point no fingers at nobody else. Did you do everything you could to win that game? Hmm. Yeah. No, oh, you did? Well, what about this play right here that you was loafing on? You were waiting for somebody else to make the tackle. And when you could have made the tackle. Well, you're right. I guess I did. Well, yeah, you can't point a finger at nobody else. You can't be mad unless you leave every ounce of what you got on that field. And, you know, to a man, I think people like me for the most part because that's what I tried to do. And so it blows my mind. It's unthinkable when I see a guy on the field who isn't giving that same effort, because everybody who's ever played, and even people who played in high school and haven't played in 15, 20 years, they would give damn near anything for one more play, one more opportunity to get on that field and run around and be with your brothers and just have fun and play a game they love, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, anything. And so for me to have it, you know, to not play now, and I don't miss it at all. At all do I miss it. But maybe that's because when I played, I never felt like I left. Like I left anything for the next day or for tomorrow. I tried to leave everything on that field, and that's what I don't see. I don't feel like I see guys leaving it all on the field. I feel like they're waiting for the next get or the next play or the next play or the next game. Or I want to save myself for the next, you know. Nah, it ain't about the next. It's about right now. Right. And until all those guys in that locker room worry about right now and the task at hand, it's going to continue to look like it looked yesterday because – I mean, to me, that's unacceptable. Like you said, you got everything to play for. And we knew the offense was going to be pretty bad. But for the defense, like, no one expected 38, 34 points at halftime. Nobody expected Saquon, who you held to 38 yards in the first game, to have 170 yards rushing. No OBJ. So it almost was like, man, we could play zero on the back end and put everybody in here to stop the run.
Right.
And we'd be okay. Like, you know, it was certain points where I saw, even scheme-wise, like they were peeling on Saquon out the backfield. And, okay, I understand the inside backer has Saquon as a flare route, but why would you want Ryan Kerrigan, who gets paid to rush the passer, or Preston Smith, who gets paid to rush the passer as a run stopper, 270 pounds, both of those guys respectively, have them dudes running with Saquon Barkley trying to cover him out the backfield? Like, to me, I've never seen anyone peel – cover Saquon Barkley. Like, I'm going to take you out of the rush and I'm going to let you peel and cover the running back because he's basically coming out right now. Like, no, I want my rushers rushing. Cover guy, cover him. You know what I mean? Zach Brown, get to him. Mason, get to him. Or safety, you got him on this play. And to me, like, that's just my mindset. I'm not putting guys in a position to do things that I don't think they can be successful to do.
Well, maybe that's what DJ was talking about, D, and we got to go, man.
D, we got to run. We're way up against a break.
But,
okay, thanks. All right. I'm sorry, fellas.
It's all good.
Thank you, man.
We'll talk to you next week, bro.
Thank you, buddy.
All right.
All right, man. That's D Hall, everybody.
All right. Let's talk to our good friend Craig Hoffman, Redskins beat reporter for The Fan, who had to endure whatever that was yesterday. I turned it off after three quarters. I didn't even watch the last quarter, to be honest with you. But I want to know what the locker room was like when you had to talk to those guys. We heard what Swearinger said. We heard what Norman said.
We heard Jay.
But how hard was that to have to go up to those players and talk about that game? What a disaster.
I thought that's what was going to happen, so I kind of was ready for it and expected it as part of the job. I mean, being around that building hasn't been fun in a couple of weeks. So at this point, it's par for the course. They were mad. They were upset. I get it. But There's questions that need to be asked now more than when they're winning. Like, sure, they're more fun to ask when they're winning, but now it's like, what's going on here? Please try to explain to us what is happening. What is it that we're not seeing that, by and large, especially on the defensive side, the same group of players and the same group of coaches is producing very different results. And so I think that's part of your job as a reporter is just to, you know, it's they're mad, you know, to give you the inside in the locker room. Like, they're mad, they're upset, they're mystified at what is happening. But, you know, as a reporter, you're the one trying to solve the mystery in many ways.
So Jay was maybe as visibly defensive as I can remember him, certainly in recent weeks. I don't know, over his five-year tenure. And maybe he has a right to. I mean, the injuries have been devastating. But sort of what was your take on his overall demeanor? Seemed very, very defensive.
Especially when you ask him about the offense. He seemed more mystified on the defensive stuff and, you know, right. Standard kind of coach answer. You got to look at the tape, blah, blah, blah. But I think he is extraordinarily frustrated by the injuries and what has happened as a result of those injuries, that he feels like Jay thinks he's good at offense. Yeah. And he's right. Jay is good at offense. Is he McVay, Nagy, those guys? Maybe not. But he's good at offense, and he feels like he can't even be good at offense right now because he doesn't have the guards to protect his quarterback or do anything in his run game. And the quarterback obviously was a disaster yesterday when Sanchez was in the game. So I think it's like, oh, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Like, I call the plays. They're good plays. If they would just do their jobs, the plays would work. And unfortunately, that's just not the reality of the situation they're in right now. They've got to find things that can work. And I feel like he's probably tried a lot. And even, you know, you don't even try a lot. You actually try a little. You try the things that are the simplest, that have maybe the lowest risk-reward ratio. Like, this should work, even if it's not going to be awesome. And hopefully we can string a couple of them together. You know, some of the quick game and stuff like that. And, you know, I think that's why he responded so defiantly to my question of, like, what didn't work for Mark, which was probably poorly worded on my part. You know, why was Mark ineffective? What didn't happen that you thought could? Probably would have been better ways to ask that. But that's why he was just like, nothing worked. I tried everything and nothing worked, because he's calling quick game and things like that, where it's 3 to 5 step drops and get the ball out, and Sanchez is taking sacks. And some of those are on the O-line giving up immediate pressure, but a lot of those were on Mark just not seeing the field at all and not getting rid of the football.
Yeah, he looked lost. I mean, he was holding on to it way too long, and, you know, he had the tip pick. The other one kind of wasn't his fault. It was kind of a drop, but he just didn't look comfortable out there at all. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think Gruden is a screamer and a yeller behind closed doors?
On occasion, is the sense I've gotten. Like, there's been a couple of times this year where he's gotten after guys or gotten after them as a whole. Obviously, there was – I don't know if he was really yelling at them on Thursday or whatever day the practice was that everyone made the big hoopla about, you know, hey, we talked to him longer after. I think that was more of like a stern talking to. I'm pretty sure after New Orleans there were some fireworks. But I don't know, like, how much good does screaming at Austin Howard do?
Right, right.
He's a tackle who's not very good, who's playing guard.
And there's a reason he wasn't in the league until you get desperate.
Right, and he's not even playing at his position.
Yeah.
Like, he's a tackle. He's not a guard. And they played him at guard yesterday, and it was a disaster. So I don't know who you yell at that point. You know, does he yell at his staff at that point, being like, I can't believe this is what we're doing? Like, we've got to coach better. But at that point, too, you're screaming at adults. And these players are adults, too. I don't know how often getting screamed at as an adult is going to be responded to positively.
How much of Josh Johnson's success was simply due to the game was already out of hand, the Giants started playing different defensively? Because he did give them a spark. He did get, like, as a Redskins fan, he gave me a reason to want to tune in next week. If we didn't have that, I mean, I would just advise everyone not even turn it on. But at least...
By the way,
yeah.
Redskins players said the same thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Peterson and Norman and Swearinger all said, like, and Norman flat out said, the only reason I'm talking to you is because Josh Johnson played well, and that gave me some hope.
Right.
Ah.
Right. Right.
So in terms of how comfortable he or why.
I mean, is that because they just completely backed off and they just had already punted at that point?
I would say he was comfortable. Now, it's going to take watching the actual All-22 back, which I'll probably watch a little bit of the first quarter and I will skip the second and third until Johnson comes in, and then I will watch that because that seems like something that is worth paying attention to moving forward. Mm-hmm. The endless amounts of three and outs in between, I think I can probably skip. But I don't know. I don't have a great sense of it yet, but he was definitely comfortable, which tells me a couple of definitive things. He knows the playbook. The play calls that were coming into his ear, even if it was a limited number of them, he knew what to do. That was a step up from Sanchez. Sanchez could not process and operate the offense, although I did feel bad for him early with some of the drops when he was making some good throws, and then he just stopped trusting everything. So Johnson felt comfortable. Two, he is athletic. That stuff is real. Yep. And he's in shape, too. You know, we can all joke about this AAFL or whatever he was the first overall pick of some league that I never heard of before. But he at least was working out and getting ready to play football, even if he didn't expect it to be in the NFL. And even if it was at a level that he felt comfortable playing in a charity basketball game last weekend, which is what he was doing. But the athleticism and the actual cardio and all that stuff of being in shape is very real. Can he repeat that? That I don't know. He did make some really high-level throws, too. The throw to Doxson on the sidelines, awesome.
Yeah.
So if he can continue to do that, maybe he's like, you know, what we thought Colt might be. That to me is like the ceiling of what he is.
That'd be amazing.
Absolutely. If they can do that and the defense, which I have less hope for, can pull, you know, whatever out of their whatever, then maybe they can win a couple of games down the stretch. Jacksonville's terrible. Like, if this is an ultimate, like, do you care or not type of game, because Jacksonville is awful right now. They're worse at quarterback, arguably, with Cody Kessler right now. So it's a bad, you know, well, it's two teams going in a bad way this weekend.
They probably don't care. I mean, talk about a team that probably had given up. But then 2 weeks ago, they shut out one of the best offenses in the league. So if they want to play, especially on their own in their home stadium.
Who's getting up for the Redskins right now, though?
That is true.
With all due respect. You know,
you may not have to get up for him.
Yeah. And who knows? But, you know, as far as Johnson goes, like, I think there were some good things. There's some positive signs. He's definitely your starter, and we'll see where he is by the end of the week.
So this is what struck me about watching that game yesterday, watching all of the games. Okay. And I flipped around and watched all of the games. San Francisco is a bad football team. Oakland is a bad football team. Now, I know Oakland's got their franchise quarterback, but San Francisco has a third-string quarterback, and they're beating the Broncos, who are right in the playoff mix. Oakland beat a division leader, right? Even though they're bad football teams, you still can compete. Washington right now is an awful football team, and they didn't compete. But when Jay says, yeah, our guys competed, they did their best, that's just not true. You don't get, you're not down 40-0 if you're doing your best.
Right, and if you are, that's actually a bigger issue.
That's a poor excuse.
If it is, it's a bigger issue. And I kind of asked Peterson that after the game. I was like, you know, you say guys are competing, and if you're competing and this is the result, why should you have hope? And that's when he was like, well, Johnson started moving the offense a little bit, and, you know, I think that gives us a little bit moving forward. But you're right. And look, there are guys competing, and that's the hardest thing about talking about football, I think, often, is there are 53 players are 46 on game day, and, you know, making blatant statements is pretty dangerous. You know, when Josh Johnson gets picked off at the goal line late, Jameson Crowder was busting his tail to try to make a tackle. That Jameson Crowder was out there trying, and credit to him and his teammates that continue to grind. And Josh Johnson's out there competing, like, you know, he's celebrating touchdowns and stuff because he didn't think he was going to get this opportunity. And, like, honestly, I'm okay with it. So things like that, but especially on the defensive side where there just seems to be this lackadaisical mentality, I would say, you know, it's not even like within the plays necessarily, are you giving extra effort? Are you rallying to the ball? But then it's like you give up a play and you see guys jogging off the field like, oh, well, it wasn't my fault. And that kind of body language and that kind of stuff infiltrates into your play because it is your subconscious of, I got to give everything, you know, are you locked in? Versus, are you just kind of going through the motions? I'm supposed to be here.
Who can you call out some people? I mean, not to be a jerk, but I mean, whose body language don't you like?
I mean, I've noticed Swearinger jog off the field multiple times, kind of with that. And like, I don't want to be body language doctor. That's dangerous. I mean, in my position, I don't know it's the best use of my reporting skills, but like, you know, you do see like DJ jogging off. And the reason I'm willing to put his name on it is because, I mean, his comments basically said, this is not my fault. And so, I mean, that gives us the insight into his psyche as well. And, you know, the merits of whether he's right or wrong. I mean, a lot of these plays aren't his fault, but I think is if you're a leader, you know, on a team, then you're looking at a different kind of approach to that. Where are you when you watch the tape back, right? Like he's yelling at guys and you're like, is that really what that guy needs right now? To be demonstrably shown up in the middle of a game? You know, if Ha Ha Clinton Dix takes a bad angle and guy scores a 76 yard touchdown and you're just jogging off the field, like kind of like, you know, and it could be viewed as a positive, like, okay, it's not bothering him. He's ready to go back, take a look and get ready for the next snap too, or the next series too. But, I just feel like the general demeanor for a lot of players right now is like, this ain't my fault. This is this other guy or this other coach, or we're not being put in this position to succeed, as opposed to, I think, great teams consistently, everybody takes ownership even when it's not their fault.
I know Eric has some hope because he's a Skins fan and Josh Johnson showed a little spark. Okay.
Yeah, I want to have a little hope.
And I'm fine with that. No,
we're in the hope business.
I believe the Skins will lose all three of these, and they'll finish at 0-7, and something's going to have to be done. Now, and we've been talking about this for 4 hours, can Jay just say, you know what, how can you fire me when my top two quarterbacks broke their legs? I've got, you know, six stringers playing.
Well, you just starting, say it's bad luck then.
Starting a guard. Can he save his job that way, or does Bruce have to just clean house, Dan have to clean house? Doesn't matter how it happened. It's just it's a part of the job.
I think you, if you're Jay, your argument would be, well, I'll make the argument for the former, and then, you know, we can discuss the latter. The former would be you go to whoever is making the decision, whether that be Bruce or Dan, and say, look, exactly, my quarterbacks both broke their legs. Alex was starting to finally get comfortable. You know, I trust Colt moving forward. I think we can do something with him next year. And we're going to, you know, obviously probably bring someone else in here. And, you know, I'm good with quarterbacks and can develop them. I'll also make some staff changes. And defensively, we're wiping out the staff. That's not my fault. Like that's maybe I'll be more hands on in the future or whatever, mm-hmm. whatever you want me to do. I'll take ownership of it. But this year, that wasn't on me.
Let me go a step further real quick, and then you can get back to it. But when Alex got hurt, they had just beaten the Bucks. All right, they're playing the Texans. If they could have, you know, you could argue that they would have beaten the Texans with Alex if he had stayed healthy.
You could make an argument that if Josh Doctson gets a PI call that's blatant and the league said was right. PI 3 days later, that Dustin Hopkins' field goal is 36 instead of 63.
Correct.
If they win.
And then you're 7-3 going right. into the Cowboy game. 7-3, and you still have your starter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a viable argument.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that the counter argument would be on the defensive side, especially, is like, Jay, this would be your fourth coordinator. Like, you don't get to hire four defensive coordinators. Sorry, at some point there's something bigger going on here, and you're not good enough at doing that to put together a complete football team to win. But so I think there's counters on both sides. You know, obviously, I think it's – I don't think – one, I never will get on the radio and advocate outside of, like, you know, the Maryland strength coach. What happened with that? Like, I felt pretty comfortable saying that guy doesn't belong to have a job. But for performance-based stuff, I'm happy to evaluate someone's performance, but calling for people's jobs, I just don't think is a good, like, these are grown folks with families. And I always have that perspective as someone who works with them. But Bruce has not done a good job in 9 years. I think that's the safest statement you can say today in Washington, D.C. And so Dan's going to have to look at that. But does Dan like Bruce and think that Bruce can still, you know, hire someone else? But at that point, you're also looking at, okay, Bruce would be on his, what, third, fourth head coach? That typically doesn't happen in this league either, to have a third head coach. So I think there's a lot of, you know, if they're going to make moves, they're either going to have to do some things that are pretty unprecedented in terms of giving guys that are here a leash, or they're going to have to clean house. I think both are on the table. But I think it also does depend on how this goes down over the final three games, because Dan has shown in his past, although he's been loyal the past couple of years here, to be emotional, and he was a fan far before he was an owner, and that has to seep into his thinking somehow.
Yeah, I think it's reached a feature. He's going to have to do something. All right, listen, we got to run. Thank you, Craig. We appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a good rest of the show.
Yeah, you too. All right, Craig Hoffman, Skins Beat Reporter.
Because think about it. I mean, Gruden could easily say, hey, if Alex doesn't break his leg, we're going to beat the Texans, and we're up. We're 7-3.
I know, but then you're just going to say, well, what happened the other 4 years? You only got the one playoff
game. That is true.
Your record's terrible. But, it just didn't work. You say sometimes life isn't fair, Jay.
But this looked
you're
like
good guy.
This looked like there was their best team that he's had. It looked like it.
Not really. Even when they were 6-3, we all knew they're a bit of a fraud. They couldn't move the ball offensively, and the defense was.
Yeah, but they were getting it done.
It was that whole win and ugly
bit. And they brought in Alex to do exactly what he was doing, not turn the ball over, even though they were averaging 17 a game.
Just didn't think that was sustainable either.
That's how quickly the season changed with that injury. They went from a possible 7-3 to now they're 6-7, and I think they'll be 6-10.
Well, as I said last week, no one collapses like my team collapses.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.